And it is a rainy Thursday. Welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show here on News 95.7. Matt Brand is our producer. We're going to be hearing from Dr. Justin Tosi. He'll be at the Halifax Public Library later tonight discussing, among other things, moral grandstanding. He says, moral grandstanding. There's a lot of it about, all of it bad. He is from Georgetown University. He's coming to Halifax to talk about the growing anger and vitriol surrounding social and political discourse, especially those who use morality and outrage to impress others. It's part of their Canadian Center for Ethics and Public Affairs lectures. The series Seven Deadly Sins looks at the old sins of the 21st century. Wrath, and it's one of them, self-righteous anger. More on that coming up. We'll also hear from two philosophy department professors from Dalhousie University, Andrew Fenton and Letitia Maynell. They were involved in a case involving a chimpanzee who took some pictures of themselves, chimp selfies. And we'll hear from them about this case recently to raise some rather interesting arguments about chattel, or at least that's how, you know, pets are described and livestock in this country, chattel in Canada. They are simply possessions. They are not entities unto their own. But if something like an elephant paints a painting, or a gorilla does some art and they sell it, who does it belong to? The zoo? Anyways, we'll open that conversation up a little bit. A little bit later on, Paul Beaton is going to join us. We haven't had Paul on for a little while. When we last did, it was about the whole conversation about whether it's appropriate for tow trucks to be included in the move over law. They have been. He thought that was a great idea to help protect their members. As he says, they all have a story, each and every one of them. And so far, no one's opposed to that. But what recently happened is I saw a Facebook post from a man who said his truck was involved with an accident. They then showed up with the tow truck to take it to a secure compound. And while it was in said compound, apparently somebody broke into it. And that has, that had that one truck owner not happy at all. We'll talk a little bit about what you should know, what you need to know if your vehicle ends up in storage. That's still to come in the broadcast. An open hour is headed your way between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Whatever might be percolating, whatever it is that you might want to throw out onto the airwaves, we'll welcome that conversation coming up in a little bit. I did send out an email to Jennifer. I haven't heard back, so hopefully we'll be able to get our guest on the broadcast to talk about Halcon. There was a big announcement yesterday, part of a provincial innovative, a cultural innovative fund. So apparently comic books and that culture are cultural and need to be innovated, apparently. But we'll talk, perhaps we're hoping to talk about that. Also on the broadcast a little bit later this afternoon, Tiffany Chase will join us from Nova Scotia Power. Renewable energy on the rise. Nova Scotia Power reaches 29% renewables in 2017. We'll find a little bit out about where that's coming from and what direction they're heading and what they'd like to see, how it can improve. And still waiting to, again, confirm that we're going to chat with the folks from Feed Nova Scotia. Why? They're set to move to a brand new location, to Burnside. That is expected to happen, I think, in 1st of May, right around the corner, eh? 4/26 right now, or the fourth month, 26th date. Again, the Feed Nova Scotia folks perhaps will be joined by them coming up a little later here on the broadcast. Of course, the butcher trial here today is where the jury is getting its direction from, obviously, the judge. That will happen after closing arguments, and because the defense did call a witness, that means there is, in fact, a defense closing statement. That's what is happening. The defense lawyer telling the jury at Nicholas Butcher's second-degree trial, he was acting in self-defense when he killed Kristen Johnston, delivering the closing arguments today, telling the 13-member Supreme Court jury the Butcher did not intend to kill her, that Johnston had been acting erratically. This is what the defense was saying in its closing argument after she returned home from her trip to Costa Rica. A lot of testimony leading up to when the accused took the stand in his own defense, Nicholas Butcher. A lot of conversation about the narrative and the timeline that suggested she was ready to break up with him. But he said, no, we were, there and we were cuddling and she was acting irrationally and that she tried to kill him. So I guess we'll have to wait to find out there what's going on. Apparently, Transportation Safety Board says the pilot of the plane that crashed that killed the former premier of Alberta, Jim Prentice. They're saying the pilot was probably disoriented. They're just releasing some information now. The Cessna Citation had taken off from Kelowna on its way to the airport in Calgary when this crash happened in October 2016. We were on the air when that happened, and it was rather shocking. A number of people in the media first said it was Jim Prentice, and that's obviously been confirmed. The Transportation Safety Agency today saying pilot was disoriented, and that's what led to that crash. Could be, quite possibly, more than likely. All right, not having any luck, eh? Okay. We'll take a break here in a few seconds, and when we come back, we're going to reach out to the president of the Roadside Responders Association of Nova Scotia, find out a little bit more about what you need to know if your vehicle ends up in a compound, a storage compound. We'll be back with more of the Sheldon McLeod Show here on News 95.7. All right. Well, the phones are all having fun today. Welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show. We're going to have an open hour if the phones work. If they don't, then it'll just be me reciting my list of favorite recipes involving sauerkraut coming up a little bit later on. I love sauerkraut. Halifax indie rock band pulling out of a music festival. I remember when the Truro Rock the Hub Festival was announced a couple of weeks ago. Mother Earth, Sloan, Big Wreck, Finger 11. A few people had said, well, okay, it's all dudes. It's all dudes who are on stage. And in fact, in-flight safety frontman John Mullane said, well, he felt that it was all dudes, nearly all white dudes. So he said he was apologizing to his friends and colleagues about the lineup, so he decided apologies weren't enough, so they have decided to pull from that event. They won't be there. He says it's a small gesture, hopes will prompt more critical thinking when it comes to festivals. There's an all-female festival down in the Lockport area, I understand, and that is every year, and I don't know, and do people get concerned, upset by that? Not entirely sure. And obviously this is getting some reaction, but so far they're the only band that has said that they won't be participating, won't be a part of it. So there you go. All right. You're listening to the Sheldon McLeod Show, and Sheldon is just rambling on here today because we're having some issues trying to get the phones to. That's the problem. It's water. We got water in the phone line. Maybe if you pick up the phone and shake it, maybe that'll work. Get the water out of it. One of those days. Again, we'll talk to Tiffany Chase from NSP. Well, luckily for me, I got a couple of guests coming in studio, so we won't be a total shutout trying to reach any of our guests here on the broadcast this afternoon. And is Twitter saying there's a problem with the phones anywhere? I don't know. Check Twitter. Twitter looks like everything's... Twitter says everything's normal. No, Twitter never says everything's normal, does it? Anyways, be interested to hear what... Oh, there's a massive power outage? Cole Harbour, just seeing Nova Scotia Power tweeting about this. There's an outage affecting Cole Harbour from Ross Road to Bissett Road, Cow Bay, and surrounding areas. That's just been announced from them. So the cause, not entirely sure. They didn't say. At least it doesn't list it on the site right here in front of us. Okay. So if we haven't reached our guest from one, do we have any luck with the 115? That's not working either? Really, no. Hey, producer Matt.
We don't really know what's going on, to be totally honest.
Okay. Hey, so
how's that for an answer?
If you're having problems with your phones, call us.
that's true.
That doesn't work. Call us on the phones if you have a problem with the phone. All right. Well, it just means we'll perhaps have to readjust the lineup. So tell me about your day. How's it been?
It was great. I could have done without the rain. Let's see.
You didn't watch the Raptors last night?
I did watch the Raptors last night. Watched this like second half on. Great game.
Oh, somebody's calling.
Oh.
That's a good sign. We were watching. Okay, and I've said this before. I'm a nerd. By we, I mean my wife and I, have had Survivor as our nightly or weekly ritual. Anytime the show's on, we watch it. And you know, there was a time it was news. Everybody would talk about who was voted off the island, and not so much anymore. It's really the only appointment viewing. But what I'm trying to tell you is we were watching some of the Maple Leafs game last night. It was looking good. We were flipping back and forth, and after, obviously, 10 o'clock, we were watching as much of the game as we could. And then when it was 4-3, 5-3, bedtime. So it was a good run. Maple Leafs, like I said, a lot of pressure yesterday. That whole idea that they were, you know, Toronto strong playing Boston. And you know, four goals in the third period. That's tough. That's tough to overcome. But again, you know, made it to the seventh game, made it to game seven. And what's this? Hockey Tonight, Penguins meet the Caps in the Eastern Conference semifinals. Third year in a row that's happened. I only know this because, well, the sports break tells me that. Pittsburgh last year prevailed in the last two with game seven victories in Washington on their way to the Stanley Cup. Is it a three-peat? Would that even be... Is that even on? Anybody talking about a three-peat? This is the Western Expansion Golden Knights, Vegas Golden Knights hosting San Jose in the first game of the Western Conference semifinals. And the Blue Jays are in action, wrapping up a three-game series against the Boston Red Sox at Rogers Center tonight. Marco Estrada goes to the mound as they take the set after splitting the first two games. Okay.
We have a guest.
That's a good sign. All right. Let's talk about Hal Kahn. Let's talk about the grant from the province's Cultural Innovation Fund. Your innovative fund, innovation. Jennifer Lamb, how are you, Jennifer?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
I don't know what's going on with the phones here. And are you a Lamb or a Lambie?
I am a Lamb.
Okay, Jennifer Lamb, you're executive director, Hal Kahn, Sci-Fi Fantasy Association. How long have you been a nerd?
Oh, God, since I was about 4 or 5.
yesterday was a huge announcement, a great big deal. This was $240,000. Do you guys get a big check, or is it money for the next 3 years, as it suggests here?
Well, the programs that we're doing are worth $240,000. What the government's contributing is around $178,000 and change, and that's spread out over 3 years. But even still, spread over 3 years, a pretty fancy check for us.
Okay, so you had to apply for this, obviously. What are the dollars supposed to go towards specifically?
So largely they're going to go toward new funding and new programs that we're managing. So we're bringing in four things. There's going to be a series of costume events teaching people how to construct costumes and props that could be used either in fun costumes or in the film industry or theater. We have a new program that we're partnering with an Ottawa-based group to provide a video game development conference that'll serve all of Atlantic. Currently, there's no real video game conferences for the industry in Nova Scotia, so we definitely wanted to showcase that, especially where it's an emerging and growing rapidly industry, and we definitely want to serve as our group here.
Okay.
And we're also covering an art show, and we are also going to be covering a reading and discussion series across the city.
Okay. Is Hal Kahn the same time this year as it's been in years past?
Yes, we're going to be in October this year, October 26th to 28th. We always try to keep it close to Halloween. Last year was a bit of an anomaly, so we're back to our usual schedule now.
Okay, why is that a good time?
It's great for us. It's the students are definitely in town. They know what's going on. They've had time to settle in. Good for families because it's sort of halfway between school starting and the holidays. And we know that it's a typically quiet time of year for tourism. It's sort of right at the end of the season. So we know that the hotels are available and that it's nice for us to be able to help tourist season actually be extended a little bit.
Hmm. Video game development conference. I know there was or is a company in Lunenburg, and there was an office here in Halifax, HB Studios. So how big a deal is video game development when it comes to Hal Kahn?
For us, it's something new. Like basically, at least half of the people that attend Hal Kahn play a video game probably daily. And many of them play many hours a day or at least per week. So we know that our audience is interested in it. So by reaching out to mobile game developers, anyone who plays games on their phone, anyone who's got a Nintendo, a PlayStation, an Xbox or whatever in their home, this is then going to allow us to feature the industries that are in Halifax and in all of Nova Scotia and Atlantic, and hopefully bring some new and amazing stuff into the city to showcase to both the industry members and the public that are super keen.
54% of Canadians play video games at least occasionally. That's a pretty big number. So how big a part of gaming? I know that the people who show up at Hal Kahn tend to, you know, find costumes that are connected to the gaming world. How big is actual gaming? Is there events there to actually game during Hal Kahn?
Yeah, so we have a combination of board games, video games, RPGs, miniatures, you name it. So we actually have probably about 400 programmed hours over the course of the weekend dedicated to gaming, whether that's a Smash game tournament on a console or whether that's a board game tournament. That's a qualifier for a regional tournament. So we have 400 hours or more every year dedicated to gaming. It's quite big.
And what's your game of choice, Jennifer?
Oh, me personally, I'm kind of a pandemic fan. I've been playing a campaign through with some friends where we're trying to save the world from disease. It's great.
All right, well, keep on saving the world. HalCon, it's a huge event for costuming, and cosplay is huge. It's part of what it is, isn't it? Isn't the bulk of the event about people who come up dressed in costume?
Well, the bulk of the event is actually just about having fun and learning about new things and embracing what you really love in terms of any kind of nerdery. But costumes are huge. People love dressing up in costume. I mean, you remember being a kid in Halloween and you got to be somebody else for the day. Well, this is adults getting to do that for 3 days, and it's pretty fun. Whether they're dressing up in video game characters or they're dressing up in like any kind of thing you can imagine, we've probably got a costume for, and they're certainly encouraged. And you know, we've got lots of courses on how to make gear if you're interested in that, or you know, you're certainly welcome to show up in like jeans and t-shirt, whatever makes your fancy. We know that HalCon is just a fun place to be, and we want people to have fun there.
Jennifer Lamb is here, Executive Director of HalCon Sci-Fi Fantasy Association. It was announced this week that there's some money available. The province's Cultural Innovation Fund is helping out. You say this is the first time that any government money, any provincial money, has come your way. Was it because you didn't ask?
No. We definitely needed to do a bit of learning on our part to understand how the different government programs are structured in terms of giving out grant funding. So there's definitely some learning there. Part of the benefit of having me on as an actual staff member is I can use my day job and my daytime to do that learning. So I was able to set up some meetings with the program officers or the directors and learn how they structure their giving so that they can get something back in terms of either development of skills or economic stimulus or whatever. So we learned over the last couple of years how to tailor our asks so that it fit the boxes that they had defined. This Cultural Innovation Fund, it was particularly amazing because it was the most flexible out of any of the defined programs that they had. So when we were able to be really creative and have a lot of fun with our ask, they were able to actually meet us at the table and find an opportunity for us.
So what does this mean? Does this mean that HalCon 2018 is going to be the biggest and best ever?
Well, it was going to be regardless of the government funding, but you know, while this looks like a giant windfall, it is actually going to be structured toward some existing programming, which will definitely help us, but we're also developing a lot of new programs that will help us for the future to grow into potentially a four-day event, into a week-long event, and certainly give us more opportunity to reach out to new industries and feature new and exciting content at HalCon itself.
Where are you going to be holding this year's event? I know it's moved around a little bit in the last couple of years. Where will HalCon 2018 be hosted?
So we will be at the new Halifax Convention Center, which is just down the block from the World Trade and Convention Center, where we've been for the last 7 years. We've grown a lot since our first year at the Lord Nelson in 2010.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be a big deal. Do you have any guesstimate as to how many people will show up, how many guests you'll have as part of this adventure?
Well, in terms of our guest lineup, we usually have between 30 and 40 people, and we're expecting that to stay on target. We are looking at some bigger, brighter names. I mean, certainly there's no shortage of amazing people we can bring into the city, but we've got some fantastic ones lined up that we'll start announcing on May 1st. And in terms of audience size, we know that we're going to have probably 9,000 tickets, give or take, sold. And when you count all the volunteers and everybody else that's part of the event, we're going to see over 10,000 people come through the building and be part of HalCon this year.
All right. Can you give us a hint who's coming? Can you give us a sneak peek, anything? A little bit?
Oh,
little nugget?
I'd get myself in trouble if
that's okay. Nobody's listening. Nobody listens to this show.
Just starting May 1st, we'll start those announcements. So keep an eye out.
Okay. Not even a hint.
Oh, not on air, no.
Okay. All right. Thanks for doing this. And Jennifer, congratulations on the money. As you say, it's not a huge pile right today, but it's about the long-term sustainability of the event. And I think you guys have many, many, many more years to come of successful fantasy conferences. Thank you.
Well, we think so, too. Thank you so much.
All right, Jennifer, take care. Jennifer Lamb, Executive Director of the HalCon Sci-Fi Fantasy Association. We're going to take a break, and two guests standing by to talk with us. A case involving chimpanzees. We'll explain. Stay tuned for more of the Sheldon McLeod Show here on News 95.7. It is Thursday, April 26th, into the second hour of the Sheldon McLeod Show. And coming up at 2 o'clock, we open the phone lines to hear what you have to say. A few moments from right now, Dr. Justin Tosse will be joining us. He'll be at the public library tonight. Moral grandstanding and self-righteous anger. That's the subject of the talk. And I think that'll lead us into an open hour quite nicely. Thank you very much. Very much looking forward to that. Very much looking forward to this conversation. Two Dalhousie University philosophers are among 17 academics who have been involved with a legal battle, which is helping a pair of chimpanzees in New York State gain a status of personhood. And this had to do with two male chimpanzees, Kiko and Tommy, and, well, cameras and selfies. In our studio, we have Andrew Fenton, philosopher at Dal. Andrew?
Hi. Glad Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you along as well. We have our other second guest here in the program. It's Letitia Menel. Did I get it right?
Close enough.
Well, then correct me.
It's Menel.
Menel. Okay.
It's no guessing.
Letitia, you guys have, how did this story even hit your radar, and how did you get involved with this? How did this even happen? Who wants to take that one on?
Well, the Non-Human Rights Project is relatively well known among folks like us who work in the area of animal philosophy and animal ethics. And so I knew of Steve Wise, who's the founder and current president, met him at a conference last year in Emory University in February. He raised the issue of how philosophers could be useful, and it was his idea to come to create some kind of amicus brief and submit it to the courts. And then Letitia and I had another meeting with him in March when he was here in Halifax.
Mm. Yeah, he came to talk to the students. What are they? Salad?
Salad. This is the Student Animal Law Society at Dal. Yeah. They're a lot of fun. Okay. They're a great group. And so they had him in for the Unlocking the Cage film, and they had a film panel. So we met him for breakfast afterwards the next day, and we hammered out the details and then reached out to friends and colleagues.
Okay. So one of the things that came up in our conversations with Steve was his assessment that the judges just weren't really smart in their rulings, that they were kind of confused in their rulings. And so we had a look at those rulings, and we noticed that in their arguments for why they were going to deny habeas corpus relief to these chimpanzees was this idea of personhood, that the judges said, look, chimpanzees aren't persons, they can't be persons, and so they can't get habeas corpus relief. And when we looked at the rulings, we saw that the judges were actually pretty confused. So what they were doing is they were equivocating. They were using the word personhood in different ways at different times without really noticing that they were going back and forth between these different meanings. And because of the way that meaning was slip and sliding around, it meant that their arguments actually weren't good arguments. And so this is kind of the bread and butter of what philosophers do. We look at concepts and we assess them and analyze them, and we sort of carefully think through what they mean and what they refer to. And we look at arguments and we see if they're actually good grounds for the conclusions they claim to defend.
A lawyer would argue, is there a crime? Has a crime been committed? Was there intent? You're saying this conversation is about whether or not a chimpanzee who takes a picture of itself, it should be considered property or should be considered what? It's not about arguing whether they're human. Argument sometimes gets misinterpreted.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's certainly for person and human, they've never been synonyms. They've never been synonyms in law. So some humans, of course, in our history weren't persons. And those are recent advances.
Slaves.
Yeah, yeah.
Indigenous peoples.
Sure, sure.
Women.
Yeah, right. Women being part persons.
Yeah, certain persons have not been, are not human. So corporations come to mind very quickly.
Okay.
I mean, those would be an example of a non-human person. Across the world, there's been shifts now to try and deal with certain environmental crises. So in New Zealand, there's a river that's now been given personhood rights. These are just ways of providing protections in a way that's not available unless they're persons. So for us, what we're interested in doing is getting folks to, and the courts, to more reflectively engage with the options on the table, which is either you're a thing or a person. Thinghood doesn't protect chimpanzees enough, not given what we know about their cognitive and social complexity. if the options are thing and person, and they're clearly not things, because these are, you know, autonomous beings that, you know, engage in complex ways with both their physical and social worlds, then the only option is personhood. And that allows for a certain level of protection that's not possible if they're things.
And perhaps philosophically, we can make the argument, but lawyers will want to stand up and say, what are the implications? So is that part of what the discussion that you folks have been involved with? What are the implications if, in fact, a chimpanzee is not just a thing?
So we actually were pretty conservative with what we argued in our amicus brief. So what we did was we wrote this document called an amicus brief, which is basically where we take the positions of being a friend of the court. That's what amicus curiae means, friend of the court. Mm-hmm. And we basically said, we're just going to try and help you get clear on the concept of personhood. And so we identified four different things that people have meant in the philosophical literature and in the general community, and four different meanings that we saw in the rulings for the word personhood and how it
self-aware.
Gets used. Actually, so self-awareness is a capacity. Mm-hmm. So one of the conceptions of personhood we talked about, and in fact the one the Non-Human Rights Project uses, is that you should determine who's a person or not on the basis of a set of capacities that matter. Right. So capacities like self-awareness, like being able to plan, like being autonomous. This word autonomy is a kind of rich moral concept that has to do with things like freedom and rationality. And so if we can identify the capacities that matter, then it's a scientific question: who has those capacities, and then who is a person?
And then for the consequences, one of the things that we want to do, these chimpanzees are being housed alone, which is, from an animal welfare science perspective, is very bad for chimpanzees because they're deeply social.
Very social.
And so what you want them to do is to be transferred to an adequate sanctuary where they can live as chimpanzees. That's the end game. And so the consequence of this, if it succeeds, is they get to go to sanctuary and live with other chimpanzees.
And some then would go to that next step, which is, does it mean any animal that is in a zoo situation, any animal that's isolated from its own kind, is it going to be only specific to this case? Because obviously this is the case that's being heard.
So the way, as I understand it, that habeas corpus works is it's a kind of one individual at a time sort of legal maneuver. Certainly, we would like to see legislation change so that some animals, and again, it's going to be a scientific question as to which animals have the relevant capacities, but that those some animals, some non-human animals, because of course humans
are
animals too.
Yep.
Yeah. Don't know what else we'd be. I'm not a tree, that's for sure.
If you were, what kind of... Never
mind. That's very different conversation.
That's a philosophical question. No, it's not. It's a jokey show question.
We leave the English department
but
to do
really,
that.
Can
stuff.
I jump in about the zoos as well? Because zoos get a hard time in animal ethics, and zoos aren't all created equal. So some of them are really great.
And I'll be blunt. I've traveled, and when the kids were small, we're in Nashville, we visit the zoo because it's there. In Calgary, we visit the zoo.
Sure,
and they're not all created equal. But
there are some animals that probably should not be in zoos. And I think the great apes are almost certainly those animals because of the way that their autonomy matters to them. They're rich cultures. These are cultural animals. And we rob them of their culture when we put them in captivity. Probably things like orcas should not be in captivity. We can't have the space for them except in the ocean. And so I think you really have to look, again, it's a scientific question. You have to look at the empirical evidence about what kinds of beings animals are and whether they can fare well or badly in a captive setting, and which kinds of captive settings are appropriate for them.
You can do it with the zoos, because this is where Letitia and I would disagree a bit. I mean, for zoos, animals like elephants, they're just too large and need too much room and too large a community to live well in zoos. Primates are complicated, and chimpanzees are complicated, and so I mean sanctuaries are still captive. I mean they're still captive beings in a sanctuary, so there's walls, there's gates. And so zoos, if the best of zoos are the ones that are actually transitioning to being sanctuaries. The Toronto Zoo is slowly coming to terms with this. I've met some zoo personnel across the country, There's a large growing awareness among zoo personnel across the country that the best zoos are sanctuaries. I think sanctuaries where you had, you know, a great deal of choice for chimpanzees in a zoo sanctuary, where you had a number of chimpanzees with whom they could socialize, I think that's very, very different than, you know, a zoo where they're just in a cage, like where Kiko and Tommy are currently being housed. Mm. And so I think some zoos could successfully have and responsibly have chimpanzees. But, you know, as societies, we need to actually support the zoos that need to redesign their spaces to be able to afford that.
I have a question for Andrew, if that's okay.
Hey, go for it.
Do you think it's ever okay to capture a wild chimpanzee and put it in a zoo?
No. The difference there would be because lots of chimpanzees now are captive bred. The problem with capturing an animal and bringing an animal as complex as a chimpanzee into captivity is we cannot replicate the enriched environment in which they live both physically and socially in the wild. And so we deprive them. If they're captive bred, they're already in a deprivation context. And so their lives will be, because you can't release chimpanzees successfully into the wild, because when they're captive bred, they're changed in a number of ways from chimpanzees that are free living. And so because they would never be released, they will always be in captivity. And so then the debate is, what captivity is good enough? And we need scientifically, as Letitia says, scientifically informed standards for that. And the idea that if they're going to be in captivity, we need to give them a life that's worth living from their perspective, which means they've got to have a whole bunch of choice. They've got to live in ways that reflect their preferences and their interests. And that's what makes a zoo, that's when zoos must be sanctuaries to do this properly. Because if zoos are simply having them on display as exhibits, even for conservation efforts, that's simply not good enough for animals as complex as chimpanzees.
And perhaps Coco the gorilla can come and do some sign language to give us a different... I don't know, does that complicate the conversation when someone asks, you know, if a gorilla can do sign language, what does that tell us about the capacity of that?
So I think, you know, when you're looking at the way science progresses, one of the things that's pretty interesting about some of the animal behavioral sciences is that we learn from certain experiments that experiments like that should never have been done. Mm. So there were some pretty terrible experiments done by a guy called Harry Harlow, I guess back in the 60s, where he was really studying the ways in which maternal deprivation harmed infants. Mm. And so he did a bunch of studies on infant monkeys where they lived in these terrible circumstances and had these kind of pathological mothers. And it damaged those individuals severely psychologically. And then he got to say, well, you see, maternal deprivation, that hurts people too. And you sort of go, well, if it hurts people, maybe it really hurt the monkeys as well.
Yeah.
No, maybe the fact that they could be so deeply psychologically and socially harmed tells us something about the underlying cognitive and emotional and social capacities of those beings. And those are the capacities that we think matter morally. So it kind of shows you the fact that they can be harmed in that way tells you something about their moral status.
Also tells you something about their non-thinghood. So if you think of things, yeah. Immanuel Kant was the one in Western philosophy, scare quotes, to actually make a strong division philosophically between persons and things. And it reflects Roman law. But things are objects that aren't self-moving. They're used by cells, but they're not cells themselves, self-move. And once you're talking about animals like macaques, which are the monkeys that the Harlow lab used, or chimpanzees or elephants or orcas, because orcas, again, these are animals that are just, they shouldn't be in captivity. They don't fare well. Mm-hmm. These are self-moving animals. These are animals that have preferences. They actually work within their social groups to satisfy their preferences. So they'll manipulate each other politically. Mm. You know, Franz de Waal has written on this in Chimpanzee Politics, a book that came out in the late 80s. This is the sort of thing that evidences that they're not things, because they're self-moving, they're self-governing. That means that they should be persons. If those are the only options, then that's where they should go.
it is a fascinating conversation beyond just a philosophical one. In fact, ramifications, implications. And thanks for coming in to talk about this. I was really interested to see that two people in this corner of the world were directly involved with this story, and it had me wondering what kind of work you're doing, and I think I have a bit better insight today. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
All right, we're going to step aside, and we'll be right back with more of our program. All righty, 10 minutes away from the open hour, a chance for us to chat about some of the stories in the news and perhaps anything else that's on your mind. In fact, our next guest will be at a discussion tonight at O'Regan Hall of the Halifax Central Library, coming in from Georgetown University, talk about the growing anger and vitriol surrounding social and political discourse, especially those who use morality outrage to impress others. As part of the Canadian Center for Ethics and Public Affairs lecture series, Seven Deadly Sins, looking at the old sins of the 21st century. On the line with us this afternoon, we welcome to our circle and to our circle of the world, Dr. Justin Tosse. Dr. Tosse, welcome to Nova Scotia.
Thanks for having me, Sheldon.
Have you been here before?
I have not been to Canada, never Nova Scotia.
All right, apologies for the rain, but washes away some of the winter grime, so to speak. We're wondering about this. I'm wondering, is there a difference between moral grandstanding and virtue signaling?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay, so here, just a couple of quick differences. One, when people talk about virtue signaling, I think they really mean moral grandstanding, because often the things that people call virtue signaling don't really have anything to do with virtue. Virtue is an excellence of character, but a lot of the things that people point out and say are virtue signaling are really just people trying to show that they're a decent person, which can be, you know, annoying and intrusive, but that's not virtue. Another difference is that signaling is involuntary. So you signal just by sort of shopping at the high-end grocery store that sells organic chocolate that you like, mm-hmm. But you might not like the message that sends. Grandstanding is different. So grandstanding is intentional. You actually want people to think a certain way of you because of the things that you say.
Okay. The conversation you'll be having tonight is about moral grandstanding. And as you've said, and I was reading the article that you sent to me, that we've all done it. For the most part. But maybe it's the audience that's different in the fact that we're all able to project that to the world through social media now.
Yeah, I think this is nothing new. We are hardwired to do this sort of thing, to manage others' impressions of us. What's different now, and the reason maybe that people notice this more, is just that it's so easy to do. That we have these social media technologies that make it basically costless for any person to just say whatever it is that they're thinking, you know, I'm so upset about this, rather than to, you know, go to a rally or try to, you know, crane their neck and get on the local news or something like that. So we probably see it a lot more now, but I don't think it's a new phenomenon.
As mentioned, Dr. Justin, is it Tosse? Did I say it right?
It's Tosse.
Tosse. Okay. Dr. Justin Tosse is here with us. There was an example given, you know, the senator's behavior was wrong. She should be publicly censured. If we cared about justice, she should be gone or he should be gone. The idea that we're judging a behavior based on our own moral compass.
Well, the idea that we're getting at there is that a lot of moral talk turns into this sort of moral arms race of people taking increasingly extreme positions to try to outmaneuver other people who've already spoken and seem, you know, more morally pure. So, you know, you think that this politician who's done something wrong was bad. Well, you know, I think it was inhuman. I think that he or she should be dragged out into the street and shot. So the worry is, you know, the incentive is to keep going until people aren't impressed anymore, not once you start saying things that are false. So you say false things to make yourself look good.
Moral grandstanding worse than being merely annoying? Why?
For one thing, I worry that it leads to an increase in political polarization. So because of that phenomenon that I just described, the moral arms race, the ramping up of moral discourse, I think that people end up using moral talk to drive a wedge between groups, right? To say, my group is the really pure one, and our position really is very extreme on this. and so on. So, you know, the concern is you see a disappearance of the middle ground, because the middle ground is nuanced. It's you know, delicate, maybe difficult to get across why it is that, you know, the issue is so complicated. It's much easier and more attention grabbing to take the really extreme position.
Well, I mean, you can take a really extreme position on capital punishment, but what about a, you know, $15 minimum wage? Can you still see that moral grandstanding in an argument that says $15 an hour for people who don't deserve it? Is that kind of running along the line that you're discussing?
You know, could be that. So, you know, one thing you might worry about is, well, there's got to be some optimal number for the minimum wage, whatever it is. Maybe it's nothing, maybe it's $15, maybe it's, you know, $50. But when we talk about it, you would want, you know, this level to be arrived at by reason giving or, you know, considerations of economic evidence rather than, well, what's the biggest number we can get, you know, get across that sounds at all plausible, right? Or, you know, on the flip side, maybe, maybe some minimum wage is a good idea, but it sounds a whole lot better to say no, absolutely, you know, no minimum wage at all, right? So the concern is just about the, sort of the process of identifying the right goal.
As mentioned, this will be part of a discussion tonight, 7 o'clock, O'Regan Hall at the Halifax Central Library. A story that just popped up here in our part of the world. There's a rock festival that's planned for later this year in Truro, and one of the bands says, you know what, it's all white dudes. So as a group of white dudes performing, we decided we're going to pull out of this event. Where does that fit on that spectrum?
Right. Well, you know, it's hard, I think, to read into any particular piece of speech or bit of behavior, whether it is that, you know, that people are grandstanding. So I'm always sort of wary to call out individuals for doing it. But it's fair, I think, you know, without really piling on that band, to say, you know, this does fit a familiar pattern of people trying to seem like they're very sensitive about diversity or whatever it is. I mean, they call it woke, being woke online. So, you know, it's a thing. Whether they're doing it or not, I don't know. But it is something to be sort of cautious about, I suppose.
And that's the beauty of talk radio. I get to pluck these real life examples out of the air and put them to philosophy professors and people like yourself who are here to talk about this. You're a postdoctoral research fellow, lecturer in philosophy at University of Michigan. Has that changed since?
I'm now at Georgetown, and next year I'll be headed to Texas Tech, where I'll be assistant professor of philosophy.
Congratulations on that. Dr. Justin Tosi, and yes. He's tonight at the public library. Thanks for adding your voice to the conversation. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Sheldon.
All right, take care, sir.
All right, bye.
Enjoy Halifax. Dr. Tosi is discussing this tonight. Wrath, and that's part of the seven deadly sins they're discussing. Which sins do you want to talk about? Or perhaps anything else that's on your mind. It's an open hour ahead, and the phone lines will be wide open. They are now. And actually, we had a tweet from someone who said the phone lines were down for a bit. I think it was Max Bettman. Said his phone just got service back, and that's probably when we were having some issues at about 20 after. 902-405-6000, toll-free 1-877-801-8255. Room for you at the table. Moral grandstanding, virtual signaling. We'll talk about anything you want. And chimpanzees with selfies, cameras. We'll be right back.